The Clear Signal with Steve Fisher.
Well, hi everyone. Welcome back to the show. Great to have you with us here for another week of The Clear Signal. clearsignal.com.au, of course, is the website, and there you can find out everything you need to know about us, catch up with some back episodes if you like, and of course, if you want to get in contact with us, well, that's the place to find out all that information as well. Well, this week, we're going to stick with the theme of travel. If you remember last week, we spoke with Irene Jones from Travel Globe, and during that chat, we touched on the topic of frequent flyer schemes, and you know, boy, are they confusing. Am I the only one who finds them confusing? I bet I'm not. Anyway, we'll be chatting with a man who travels extensively and has created a great social media channel to help us navigate the intricacies of all these schemes. We'll be speaking with him in just a moment or two. And coming up in the second half hour, we're going to be looking at the almost equally misunderstood art of training our dogs. Well, I mean, at least that's very much the case in this house, and it's something that I've never really been overly proficient at, and that's despite being a really enthusiastic dog owner. In fact, right now, as I record this, we've got three dogs here in the house, and in fact, one of those is curled up in the studio right now. Anyhow, we're going to be catching up with Rose from Melbourne Dog Trainers for some great information on how to do it right when it comes to dog obedience. I'll tell you what, I'm really looking forward to that. I could really use some great tips and tricks on that. But first, let's get our heads back in the clouds and talk about our frequent flyer points. Callum Rendell is the creator of a YouTube channel called Pointy End Secrets, where he shares with us his knowledge of just how to make those points that we've all got accumulating there work the best for us. G'day, Cal. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Congratulations on the channel, mate. I think a lot of these channels around now that we see on new media, it's kind of almost a community service, because some of these frequent flyer schemes, they're so confusing.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I feel like I have a wealth of what I thought was useless knowledge. And then the more I've started to speak to people about frequent flyer programs, I realized it's really by design been made difficult and for people not to be able to actually make the most of it.
And I think really the whole point of it is it's really my lived experience is probably the best way to, you've got to go out and experience all this stuff. And I guess in your line of work, you're kind of uniquely qualified because you do a lot of travel.
Yeah. By trade, I'm a sound engineer. So I, would fly domestically and internationally a good 100, 120 times a year doing gigs and festivals, and really became a real staple of my life being at the airport.
I often quip to people, if I had a job at an airport, then my productivity would drop to zero because I just love those places.
Yeah, I can stand around and look at the planes out the window all day.
Absolutely. We're talking here about the Australian market. So we're talking predominantly about Qantas's frequent flyer scheme and Virgin's Velocity scheme. They're the two major players in the market here. Unfortunately, we don't have any others to choose from, really. And Callum, I guess you've probably got points in both schemes like most of us do. I mean, I've got points in the Velocity scheme, points in the Qantas scheme. I think I might even have Air New Zealand, and I've certainly got a little account there with Singapore Airlines as well. So they're sort of all over the place. Should we be doing that? Is one scheme better than the other?
I wouldn't say that one is better than the other. At the end of it, I think it comes to flexibility. Like they've both got a massive amount of flexibility in both partners that you can redeem your flights on, but also places that you can earn from. Like you might have a health insurance, for example, which earns Qantas points, but there's not one that does Velocity points, and vice versa. So having, being exposed to both means that you can really take massive advantage of it.
And I suppose flexibility is kind of the key to this, but as we talked about, it can be confusing. And I mean, are they designed to be deliberately so, or is it just that they've sort of evolved over time, do you think, to where they've sort of become a little bit too confusing for people? I note with interest that Virgin has recently changed their scheme a little bit, maybe to make it a little bit easier to navigate.
Yeah, it's almost by design. There's a possibility to really take advantage of it. So for every person like me that can redeem points on quite literally hundreds of thousands of dollars of flights, there's another 100 or another 1,000 people that have redeemed the same amount of points on a vacuum cleaner or a coffee machine, which is costing the airline nothing. So it's still worth their while to pay me out for what I want to do, because they're preying on everyone else that doesn't really know how to do it, on just wasting their points and making them less valuable.
Because these schemes are really quite big money spinners for the airlines. There's no doubt about that. In fact, in Qantas's case, I know, having covered aviation for a long time, I mean, I know that their frequent flyer scheme at Qantas is one of their biggest money spinners.
Yeah. There is massive amounts of money. Like even when Virgin Australia went into administration during COVID, it was a massive part of their business that they wanted to save because they knew both how much value was in it and how much value is in it for them in terms of people spending extra money in their business.
Well, we talk about value for the airlines, but of course, we as customers, as flyers, we want value for ourselves. So I suppose there's two ways you could look at frequent flyer schemes, and I tend to gravitate towards one of these. You can either go and buy the seat outright using your points, or you can buy the seat and use it for upgrades. Do you have a preference for that?
Yeah, it's hard. The golden rule, I suppose, is if you want to fly business or first, you have to book a business ticket because otherwise you're not kind of guaranteed anything. And upgrades can be really tricky. Like a lot of people just go, oh, I'll just buy the cheapest fare that I can and then bid for an upgrade. And that's all well and good, but there's so many different factors in having your upgrade approved. So if we take Qantas, for example, or with any airline, you for the very, very base level, you need to buy a fare that's actually eligible for an upgrade. So if you buy the bottom tier light fare, you're not going to be eligible anyway, and you've just wasted that opportunity. Mm. But then if you take Qantas, for example, the two big things that come into it are the chosen fare that you've bought and your status. So if you're a platinum frequent flyer and you've bought a flex economy fare, you're right at the top of the list of upgrades. But if you are a bronze member and you've bought a choice fare, like the lowest available upgradable fare, you're at the very bottom of the list. And if there's only 28 business seats on the plane and there's only five left the day before the flight leaves, there's probably going to be people above you who are going to get it before you. So if you want to fly business, you kind of just have to buy a business.
And I mean, is this really the goal? I mean, I know for myself, and I've talked about this in many other editions of this show, I'm not exactly slight of frame and I'm getting pretty old and grumpy. And you know, when I do overseas trips, I just don't want to be squashed into economy anymore. So I'm prepared to pay that premium and go for a business type seat. I suppose that brings you down to the other concept of using, you know, points and pay, they call it sometimes. I mean, there's so many different strategies. What's the best metric to work this sort of stuff out? Or is there one?
Yeah, there actually is. I won't take the credit for this, but there is a method that we use to work out the value of our points. And that's the cost of the redemption multiplied by 100 and divided by the number of points that you need. And that gives you a cents per point value. So if you go and buy a coffee machine or a vacuum cleaner off one of these schemes' web stores, or use your points as cash to buy a flight, you'll almost always get a half a cent per point in value, as opposed to a classic rewards flight, which is usually around 4 to 8 cents per point in value. The best redemption I ever made was a Qatar first class flight worth over $14,000. Cost me 118,000 velocity points, but that came out at just over 11 cents per point. So if you put that up against the vacuum cleaner, it's a pretty crazy difference.
Yeah. And are there any sort of online calculators that can help you work this stuff out, or is it just a matter of making up a spreadsheet perhaps and plugging it all in?
Yeah, I mean, you can just use the calculator on your phone, but there's a points hack webpage, which you just type in how many points you need and you type in the dollar value and it'll tell you exactly what cents per points there is.
So strategies to accumulate those points, I mean, there are all sorts of schemes. I guess all of us have like a Fly Buys card or a Coles reward card, or most of us have probably got both. And then there's credit cards as well. I suppose people have to be really careful though using credit cards because that can be a trap for really obvious reasons.
Yeah, credit cards are obviously fraught with their own danger, but they are the easiest way to accumulate. Like you've got Woolworths Rewards, Flybuys, BP, 7-Eleven for fuel. And if you buy car hire or you book your hotel, you can get extra points on that. But if you pay for that with a points earning credit card, you end up double dipping on everything. But there's also a lot of really big sign-up bonuses that you can get, not just on credit cards, but on everyday things that we're all spending, like your health insurance and your car insurance. You can get huge bonuses like that. And if you're in a position like me, I actually pay our monthly rent and my business's tax and GST payments off a points earning credit card every time. So it's money that I was already spending. I'm able to pay that off straight away and walk away with, you know, a good couple of 100,000 points a year.
I think that's really a key message too for some people. I mean, credit cards are fine as long as you are disciplined with them. And as you say, if you can rack those points up and then pay it off straight away, that's absolutely the way to go. I was doing that with a Macquarie card just recently until, unfortunately, now Macquarie Bank, just to put one brand out there, have actually ceased their relationship with Qantas Frequent Flyer. So it makes me wonder whether I should go looking somewhere else.
Yeah, as long as you can pay it off and if you're only using money that you were going to be spending anyway, then it's a really, really good strategy.
Yeah. And of course, we should put the disclaimer in here, Cal, as you do at the front of all your videos, that none of this that we're talking about here should be construed as financial advice. It most certainly isn't. But, be careful, folks, with credit cards. Everybody knows that, I think. So, in these times, it can be a little bit of a trap. Cal, do you think obviously there are times of the year where it's cheaper to buy seats, you know, outright. Are there better times of year to go looking to use your frequent flyer points?
Yeah, absolutely. Most airlines will release their frequent flyer reward seats at about the 350, 340 day mark. So you really have to be a good 12 months ahead, especially if you're looking to book in peak season. So if you want to go to Europe in what is our winter and their summer, you need to be logging on at 12:01 to try and find that seat and book it, because they will disappear quite quickly. Mm. But if you're in a position like me where you're pretty flexible and you know that you've got more time to have holidays in those slightly off peaks, so I can't travel over summer, for example, because that's my work busy season, but May to June or August is pretty quiet for me. It's quite a lot easier to find reward seats in those days as opposed to Christmas and New Year's and June, July overseas.
The Clear Signal.
Listening to The Clear Signal, Colin Rendell is our guest this first half hour from Pointy End Secrets, helping us understand a bit more about our frequent flyer points and frequent flyer schemes in general. Colin, Just before we started this interview, Qantas actually just popped an email through with my monthly frequent flyer points balance, and I see it going up there ever so slowly. Frequent flyer points tend to devalue over time, I suppose. How long should we hold on to them, or should we just spend them when we've got the chance?
I always advocate for spending them when you've got them. They're always increasing the cost of redemptions. And at the same time, points don't accrue interest. If you've got them, spend them. They're there to be spent. They're there to, you know, if you're saving up points for that once in a lifetime trip, then yeah, you know, if it takes you a couple of years, that's fine. But if you've got them and you have the opportunity to use them, just use them. Like, you know, if you think you probably might be due for a holiday around September, October next year, jump on and have a look.
The other thing about frequent flyer points too, I note with interest, I only just found this out recently, actually, Cal, you can actually buy frequent flyer points if you want them. I didn't know you could do this.
You can. Both Qantas and Virgin both allow you to buy frequent flyer points. And it might seem a little counterintuitive, but it is actually super useful. So if you know that you're going to be traveling next year, you know you've got to go to Europe, for example, and you're like, oh, I might want to fly business. That could be really cool. You jump on, you're probably looking at about $5,000, even if you are this far out in advance. But if you jump on and you find there is a reward seat, which on Velocity is worth about $139,000. Maybe you don't have that many. You can buy 150,000 Velocity points for just over $3,500. So if you buy those points and book the flight, you've saved yourself $1,500 on that seat. And the same goes for economy.
That's really amazing. I saw a great example you put up recently. I think it was the Qantas scheme where you could go in and buy a box of wine and essentially get the box of wine for free, but bag a whole heap of points in the process.
Yeah, wine is a really handy thing if you've got, you know, 120,000 and you need 140,000, there's a seat there that you're looking for. You can jump on and buy a box of wine that comes with, you know, maybe 10,000 bonus points, which will cost you maybe $300, but that's going to save you thousands on the cost of your ticket.
I mean, do they run sales at times of the year where you can go and buy these points? Like are there times of year where it's easier to get in there and really maximize that, you know, amount of points you can get for your dollar?
Yeah, both Qantas and Virgin regularly run sales on buying points. It's either at a discounted rate or points on top. So they might have a thing for every 100,000 points you buy, you'll get an extra 40,000 or something like that. So if you know you're going to be buying a flight, it could be something really easy.
And what about pooling your points? I know Virgin have on their scheme a family pooling thing. My son and his partner, in fact, recently just did that. They pulled their points together and got a pretty good deal out of Virgin for a trip they did. Does Qantas offer that too, or do all airlines offer that sort of ability?
Qantas don't. The Virgin family pooling is actually one of its really big strengths, which gives you the option to pool one adult and four children that live in the same address into one person's account. Which, if you've got a whole family, you might fly a couple of times a year for work and you might take one family holiday. If you pool your partner and your four kids into your account, a Melbourne to Gold Coast return trip with those six people in one account could be worth 240 status credits, which puts you basically all the way to silver status far faster than doing it on your own.
Well, status credits, another thing I wanted to talk to you about, because I think a lot of people try and rack these status credits up regardless of how often they travel. Do you have the opinion, as I do, that kind of depends on how often you travel as to whether it's even worth chasing those status credits?
Absolutely. It's a really big one. Like the need for status is really subjective. Status sets you up with things like extra baggage, priority service, you know, lounge access whenever you're flying. But if you're flying business, you get all of that anyway. So if you've got points and you're looking to fly business, you really don't need status. If you're like me and you fly a couple of hundred times a year and most of the time it's in economy because it's through work, it can be really great to be able to, you know, walk through express check-in and go and sit in the lounge. But if you're only flying five times a year, just go and buy a lounge pass when you turn up at the airport, or, you know, cop the really expensive beer at the airport lounge, because it's still going to be cheaper than chasing status.
100%. You've really got to weigh that up, don't you? I know some people are really fanatical about getting that status. And I guess it's good for the ego to say you've got platinum status or something, but you've really got to do the value proposition on that, I think.
Absolutely. Like whenever there's a double status promotion, I always see people going, oh, you know, is it worth me spending $3,500 to take these flights that I wasn't going to take anyway just to get gold status? And it's like, well, that $3,500 could be a lot better used you know, buying yourself a drink or buying yourself a lounge access on the five times a year that you probably are flying. Because if you need to fly that much to attain status, you probably don't need it.
Well, yeah, that's a great point. And to buy a lounge pass is usually not that expensive anyway, if you want that sort of those sort of services.
Exactly.
Now, let's talk about airline alliances. Qantas, for example, is part of the Oneworld Alliance. We have other alliances like SkyTeam. I know, for example, recently that Virgin Australia has hooked up with United Airlines for people who want to schlep across over to the US. How do those alliances work when it comes to frequent flyer points? Can you, for example, use your points that you've got, say, with Virgin and book those directly with United, or Qantas and book directly with Emirates or whatever? How does that all work?
Yeah, so that's one of the really big strengths of alliances and partnerships. So there's Oneworld, SkyTeam, and Star Alliance. So Qantas is part of Oneworld. Star Alliance has airlines like United and Singapore. Virgin aren't actually part of an alliance, but they do have direct partners with United and Qatar and Singapore. So what this means is if you, for example, fly on a Oneworld airline with your Qantas frequent flyer number, you earn points, your status is recognized. But on the flip side, you can also use your Qantas points or your Virgin points to book flights directly with those airlines that the airline is in partnership or in an alliance with. So you can spend your Velocity points on Qatar, Etihad, ANA, Singapore Airlines, or with Qantas, you can spend your points on American Airlines, Japan Airlines, Cathay Pacific, or with their direct partners, which includes Emirates. So you can actually spend your Qantas frequent flyer points to fly Emirates first class.
It's interesting talking about Qantas. I hear a lot of feedback and a lot of griping a lot of times about the Qantas scheme. It seems to be, anecdotally at least, quite difficult to book reward seats when you're traveling internationally. And I was talking to a friend of mine this morning who's actually been a guest on this show that's just come back from Korea and was griping about that, hence that question. Like, he wonders whether he should have even wasted his time trying to use his points direct with Qantas and taken those points and booked with somebody else. I guess you just got to be lucky at times.
Yeah, absolutely. And the introduction of Qantas's Classic Plus system has massively devalued their redemptions. It's made it really hard to find classic rewards and now brings in the whole idea of dynamic pricing. One of the biggest pieces of advice I have is to actually avoid using your Qantas points to fly Qantas and to use them on partner airlines. Not only are most of them a better product and service than Qantas, but the points needed are even more attainable, even if it means you have to make a stopover somewhere.
I touched on the Virgin and United one. Is that a good arrangement? I mean, when I look at airfares, and I'm based here in Melbourne, you're looking at flying to LA or whatever, they are an expensive carrier right now, United, to fly on.
Yeah, they are, even like in economy or business, but it's kind of reflective of how few airlines we have going to the States. So out of the East Coast, you've got Qantas, United, American Airlines, and Delta, and that's about it. You can go via New Zealand or you can go via South America, but there's not a whole lot of competition and the prices are just going up and up and up. You can use your Velocity frequent flyer points to fly United. The only problem that most of us are having is they only release one or two seats on every flight. So you have to get quite lucky to find a seat alone. But then if you're traveling with a partner or a friend, being able to get two seats on the one flight is really difficult.
Speaking of Virgin now, just in the last few weeks, actually, as we record this interview, they've actually announced some big changes to their frequent flyer scheme. Do we think those are good changes? Are they good changes? That seems to me, at least, as I mentioned earlier, like perhaps they've even simplified it a bit.
Yeah, we're still waiting to see exactly what's going to change. I think the introduction of lifetime gold status is a really great move. The increase in redemption prices is obviously not desirable, but the proposed buyout by Qatar could see it be even easier to find flights in and out of Australia to Europe and have our Velocity status held in even higher regard. So we're hoping it's going to see more flights and more availability, but it's just not totally clear yet.
Now, this last question, because time's getting a little away from us, unfortunately, Kel, but this is particularly self-indulgent because it's just something I've been doing lately. I've been channeling most of my points flow into my Virgin Australia frequent flyer scheme, because my wife and I love to travel to Singapore, and I had this idea that I might transfer them at one point into my KrisFlyer account, which is Singapore Airlines. Is that a smart strategy, or based on what we talked about before, should I just try using my points and just book direct?
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely something that's possible. It's worth keeping in mind that when you transfer velocity points to Chris Flyer, it goes at a rate of 1.5. It's actually 1.55 velocity points to one Chris Flyer mile. So you are losing out on a chunk of points that you could have had. But if you go on and you can't find any Singapore Airlines flights through Velocity, you might actually be able to find them directly with the airline. So airlines will release reward seats predominantly to their own system and then a handful to their partners. So just because there's none on Velocity doesn't mean that they don't exist with the airline themselves. So if it's a last resort, you know when you want to fly, you might actually be able to find them on that airline. You'll wear a little bit of the price, but at least you'll still be able to get that flight.
Okay, great information. I will take great notes of that. We love. What do you now? I see you do a lot of trips to Singapore. Is their airport there at Changi the coolest airport on the planet? I think it is.
I love it. Changi is absolutely incredible. It's one of the only airports where, you know, people will contact me and say, "Oh, I'm doing this flight. I'm going through Singapore. Should I buy a lounge pass?" You know, you kind of don't need to.
No.
The airport is so big. There's so much to do. There's so much good food. There's actually a proper Singapore hawker center, food center downstairs underneath the shopping center where the Jewel is. So you don't even have to worry about paying airport prices for food.
It is an amazing place. It is an amazing place. And just as we finish up here, now you not only talk about frequent flyer points, but you also talk about luxury travel. Do you have some airlines that are your favorites that offer a better business class? What's your pick of maybe your top two or three?
For business, you'd have to say Qatar. Qatar, with their Q suite, has won best business class for a few years now, and they brand it as first in business. And it is, you know, really true of what it is. And then obviously, if you look at something like Emirates' first class with the gold-plated walls, you can't really go past the Middle Eastern carriers.
They really changed the game, didn't they, the Middle Eastern carriers, when they sort of started really stepping things up, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, you really feel like a king or queen when you're there.
It's certainly a big step up from my first overseas flight, which was on an Air New Zealand classic Boeing 747. This is in about 89 with no in-flight entertainment or anything. It's a very different world we live in these days, I can tell you.
Yeah, we're a long way from that, thankfully.
Callum, it's a wonderful channel, Pointy End Secrets. You're on Instagram and you're on YouTube, of course. Anywhere else we can find you online?
That's actually about it for a young person. I'm not super active on social media, but yeah, YouTube or Instagram, or anyone can email me at pointyendsecrets@gmail.com if you ever want to chat or ask some questions about how you can improve your own frequent flyer balance.
Fantastic, mate. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up after the break, we're going to be looking at the interesting topic of teaching our dogs how to be a little bit more obedient. And when I say looking for us, I'm talking about me because I am singularly hopeless at it. Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Clear Signal